Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
New York State lawmakers returned to session this week with plans to vote on bills aimed at helping New Yorkers cope with the changes caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The Assembly and Senate began by convening committee meetings for the first time in several weeks. But unlike the crowded rooms of the past that were full of staffers, lobbyists, and journalists, the gatherings were mostly done remotely.
We have present in the meeting Mr. Benedetto, Ms. Walsh, Ms. Arroyo.
Assembly committees shared a feed to hold a succession of meetings, providing audio but not video of the proceedings. Assembly Education Chair Michael Benedetto described the one bill on the agenda, sponsored by Assemblyman Felix Ortiz.
It is a bill which would provide that school districts will not experience a reduction in state aid in the 2019-20 school year for closing the school district due to the virus.
The measure passed unanimously with none of the traditional spirited discussions between majority Democrats and minority party Republicans.
And I am seeing no hands up right now to be against the bill.
In the Senate, the chair and ranking minority member of each committee met in person in a conference room in the Capitol, outfitted with a webcam. Three other people were permitted in the room, the committee clerk and two staff members. All wore masks.
A quorum is present by virtue of proxy voting.
Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Brad Hoylman's agenda included a measure to extend the one-year look-back window for survivors of childhood sexual abuse to pursue civil lawsuits against their alleged abusers. The current time frame was to expire in mid-August, but with the courts having been essentially shut down since March, Governor Andrew Cuomo earlier issued an executive order extending the window until mid-January. The legislature's measure would extend the window for a second full year. Hoylman says several other states allow victims who have passed the statute of limitations a longer period to file civil lawsuits.
What we're doing today, not only are we recognizing COVID-19 and the disruption it's caused to adult survivors and their ability to file claims, but we're also following the lead of other states that have added multi-year windows.
The committee also approved a measure to extend a prohibition on evictions for non-payment of rent if the tenant is economically affected by the coronavirus. There have been long delays in some cases for laid-off New Yorkers obtaining unemployment insurance checks due to the large volume of applicants that has overwhelmed the state system. The measure would allow delayed unemployment checks as a reason for missed rent payments. A related bill would provide up to $100 million in vouchers for landlords whose tenants are unable to meet their rent payments between April and July. Other bills being considered include a moratorium on tax foreclosures and options for deferring the payment of some business taxes. Pharmacists would be authorized to offer the COVID-19 vaccine when there is one. And long-term care facilities, including nursing homes, would be required to come up with a pandemic plan. The virus has taken a tremendous toll on nursing home residents. Lawmakers do not plan for now, though, to address one of the state's biggest challenges, the $13 billion budget deficit. Cuomo says without additional aid from Washington soon, he'll have to slash aid to schools and local governments by $8 billion.
With no money from the federal government, schools get cut 20%, local government gets cut 20%, and hospitals get 20%.
Once the governor comes up with a budget-cutting plan, the legislature would have 10 days to amend or accept it. Cuomo says he's not laying out his proposal now, though, because he's still hopeful that the federal aid will come through. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, Governor Andrew Cuomo met with President Trump this week at the White House. Although the governor claimed that his meeting with President Donald Trump was not politically driven, he did not mince words in his criticism afterwards against some of Trump's allies on Capitol Hill, declaring that good government is gone from America. We know. We've been talking about it for weeks, that he needs the federal money in order to get New York on some more stable budgetary track.
Well, he's been playing this as cautiously as he can. When attacked, he responds. But basically, he has known this president for a long time. They're both Queens residents. They were both raised in Queens. And this governor has no choice but to play ball with this president on some level. Because if he doesn't, you know, there will be hell to pay. He needs the resources. $13 billion, you know, that we are in the hole in New York State. And I live in Massachusetts. Every state needs this help. And when I say we, I work in New York and I pay taxes in New York. So it is incredibly important that he come to some resolution with this president and that the president helps him. We know that Cuomo needs the money and the state of New York and state of Massachusetts need the money. But what we don't know is why this president, who plays to his base all the time and who does not want to show any kind of help for blue states, because it will hurt him with his own base. That base is what he is counting on to get him reelected and has been from the very beginning. So that's what this is about right now. Cuomo goes to see the president. He can't. He just can't afford to alienate the president right now because he needs the help for the state. It's that simple.
Right, and that help is relying on the Senate to pass the HEROES Act at this moment. So the governor's hands are tied a bit, right, Alan? Because it's the congressional delegation and their push for that money that will ultimately help make the difference.
I believe that there is going to be some kind of resolution, that even this president cannot stop that from happening. There will be probably a major price to pay in that the president will be helping his friends, McConnell will be helping his Republican friends. But in the end, something will have to give here, because it is unthinkable that the United States could allow its states to fall into default. And that's right now, if you're $13 billion in the hole, somebody is going to have to come up with that money, or you're going to have to fire an awful lot of teachers, police officers, sanitation men, everybody else. So my bet is that they have to do something.
New Siena College poll out this week, Alan, sees the governor's approval rating dip a bit. He's down to around 66% from a previous all-time high. I imagine, since he's been talking a lot about the pain coming to New York, 20% cuts in things like education and health care, can you imagine, are having an impact.
I think that's having an impact. He made a few mistakes. He's apologized basically for them. The question of the nursing homes and how they were handled. He thought he was doing the right thing in saying, hey, these people have to go somewhere when they're done with the hospital and I'm ordering the nursing homes to take them, even if they're positive for the virus. That got an awful lot of people very angry. And the people came up with alternatives. They said, hey, you just closed the Javits Center. Why couldn't they go there? You just sent the hospital ship back. Why couldn't they go there? In any case, it's easy for anybody to say, I know better than this governor did. He did the thing, he said it was wrong, and I think that he's paid a little bit of a price for that. So New York is the epicenter. There will be people who say it didn't have to be the epicenter. I don't see how that's possible, because it is a massive city. People are shoulder to shoulder. It was going to happen. And one last thing, David, and that is he's down to 66%. Most politicians would die for 66%.
Right. Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Unionized nurses held a town hall with New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. about the government's response to the COVID-19 crisis. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard has more.
The New York Nurses Association organized the call with New York's junior senator. Nurses from across the state shared their experiences in the frontline fight against COVID-19. They questioned the Democrat about what she will do to address shortcomings in the government's response to the virus. Kelly Cabrera is a registered nurse at Jacoby Medical Center in the Bronx, one of the hardest hit hospitals in the country.
What can you do to help establish OSHA protections for COVID-19 and ensure that the CDC will return to establish scientific standards during future surges? Because we all know, at least on the front line, that hasn't been happening.
Gillibrand explained that she is a co-sponsor of a bill to require the Department of Labor to establish emergency and permanent standards to protect workers from coronavirus.
I am a co-sponsor of the COVID-19 Healthcare Worker Protection Act of 2020, which would require OSHA to ensure healthcare facilities have infection control plans to protect frontline health workers from exposure to infectious diseases. I've also called on the Trump administration to provide transparency into how health equipment and PPE are being allocated.
Gillibrand is also a supporter of the HEROES Act. The package of legislation that passed along party lines in the House faces uncertainty in the Republican-controlled Senate. The act would provide hazard pay for healthcare and other frontline workers. Several of the nurses on the call brought up PPE shortages they experienced. Anthony Ciampa, a registered nurse at New York Presbyterian Hospital and first vice president of NYSNA, complained of unequal distribution of federal relief aid.
For example, New York University's Langone Medical Center, one of the richest hospitals in the country, received over $295 million from the CARES Act, while Brooklyn Hospital, a safety net hospital that was severely hard hit by COVID-19, only got $43 million. NYU received more money than the entire 11-hospital public system in New York City.
Gillibrand blamed the Trump administration for how emergency funding was distributed.
Every time we ask for money to be distributed where it's needed, we watch FEMA and we watch the administration send it to where their political allies are. So hospitals in Georgia and Alabama might have everything they need plus some, and the hospitals in New York have not nearly enough.
Grievances did not just stem from nurses in the New York City area, but also in the Capital Region. Albany Medical Center nurse Patty Pino claimed her coworkers were unnecessarily put out of work as the hospital responded to COVID-19.
The hospital calls it a labor pool, but what it boils down to is a way for them to save money and not call it a layoff, when we should be preparing the surge here in the Capital Region. Not only were nurses denied unemployment benefits, which will ripple economically across distressed communities, but we missed the chance to train nurses in the critical care that many COVID patients need. Several of us even volunteered to go down to New York City as part of the union's upstate nurse COVID corps, but Albany Med would not let us go.
Gillibrand responded by saying there needs to be pushback on the hospitals laying off staff.
What they're trying to do is save money because they don't want to go out of business because they have no paying patients. But the reality is, if you're laying off our first responders, they're not going to be there when you need them.
Because of the COVID-19 crisis, hospitals in New York were required to restrict elective surgeries in order to keep a certain number of beds available for a possible surge in coronavirus patients. Albany Medical Center said it has not furloughed any of its staff members. The hospital said in an email that anyone placed on standby leave receives full pay and benefits and is asked to stay at home, but to remain on call to return to work within 24 hours. The email says in part, quote, "Due to the prevalence of COVID-19 in the New York City area, any staff member who travels there is placed under quarantine for 14 days to protect our workforce and patients. Therefore, a nurse who travels to the New York City area is unable to care for patients for 14 days," end quote. With the balance of power in Washington up for grabs this November, the former Democratic presidential candidate closed the call by detailing her support for emergency Medicaid coverage for anyone in need during the pandemic and the future establishment of a public option for health insurance. That, she said, would allow the U.S. to move toward a Medicare for All system.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Earlier this month, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that New York is collaborating with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in a plan to develop a smarter education system. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has reaction to the plan.
The coronavirus pandemic resulted in moving the remainder of the school year online, leaving students, parents, and teachers wondering whether there might be physical classes in September. Cuomo says remote learning, necessitated by social distancing, offers an opportunity to take advantage of technology to reimagine education.
When we are reopening schools, let's open a better school, and let's open a smarter education system. We've all been talking about tele-education, virtual education, remote education, and there's a lot that can be done. You know, the old model of everybody goes and sits in a classroom, and the teacher is in front of that classroom and teaches that class, and you do that all across the city, all across the state, all these buildings, all these physical classrooms. Why, with all the technology you have?
Jasmine Gripper, executive director of the Alliance for Quality Education, finds the idea problematic.
We believe technology is a great tool to enhance learning, but it is not a tool for learning on its own. We know that children spending too much time in front of a screen, whether it's a computer screen, a TV screen, or a phone screen, is not really healthy for their development. And in fact, students should be spending more time interacting with adults. That is how genuine learning takes place. That is how we get children to meet their full potential.
Molly Heakin teaches second grade in the Onteora School District in northern Ulster County.
Teachers have seen in the past 7 weeks how difficult this is to educate children remotely, that it just heightens these equity issues that are already present in our society. Our ability to reach every student has so many variables. When a student walks into a classroom, it's almost like this great leveler that we're all in the same space with the same materials, the same accessibility. That's not what happens when you have remote learning.
Gripper claims the governor and the Gates Foundation both have a history of pushing privatization and agendas that could undercut public schools. She says schools need more resources, not cuts. New York State United Teachers Union President Andy Pallotta is on the same page.
If we want to reimagine education, let's start with addressing the need for social workers, school psychologists, school nurses, enriching arts courses, and smaller class sizes in school districts across the state. Let's secure the federal funding and new state revenues through taxes on the ultra wealthy that can go toward addressing these needs. And let's recognize educators as the experts they are by including them in these discussions about improving our public education system for every student.
United University Professions President Fred Kowal takes a different stance.
The present crisis gives us the opportunity to build a much more equitable society through access to public higher education, more access, more affordable, and also more diverse. This is the time to expand, for instance, medical education so that we have the specialists needed to deal with circumstances like the coronavirus and other long-standing medical challenges in New York. This is a time to grow our public sector, expand it, and fund it through a progressive tax system.
Cuomo has not offered a timetable or expanded details of the plan.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With us to talk about New York State's response to the COVID-19 pandemic is Lieutenant Governor of New York, Kathy Hochul. Thanks for taking the time.
No, I always enjoy the opportunity to speak directly to your very educated listeners and to share with them what we know about our reopening and how we're managing the public health crisis.
Well, you're so right about that. Our listeners are very much interested in information. What can you tell us in your role now as coordinating the upstate and Western New York response along with former Lieutenant Governor Bob Duffy? What's our update? We know we're reopening in some parts of the state. What can you tell us?
We are in a much better position this week than we were even a week ago. I think we're in a good place in terms of the compliance from businesses. In Western New York alone, we had over 800 businesses go online and certify that they're willing to follow the protocols that we've established based on Centers for Disease Control guidelines, which is important. And those are primarily in construction, manufacturing, and some limited retail, which is what phase one is all across the regions that have been given the green light to go ahead. So that's what we're monitoring and certainly making sure that they adhere to what they're doing, and that's up to the local law enforcement authorities. But we don't expect to see problems because think about this. The business community's interest in maintaining a secure, safe place for their employees is aligned with the public's interest and government's interest. We all want the same outcome here, which is to contain the spread, limit exposure to people, to each other with the social distancing, wearing masks, taking the hygienic precautions about the cleaning and washing hands. So if every work site is doing that, we should be in a better place as we start to slowly reopen the economy. But this first phase one is really important for us to monitor how people are adhering to our requirements and distancing guidelines to allow us to get to phase two, which a lot more people are going to be excited about. And that's the hair salons and the barber shops and the retail and a lot of other industries that we've all been waiting for.
Everyone needs a haircut. Well, let's talk about the specific regions that are open. You mentioned seven.
Western New York was open since Tuesday. Capital Region just went online as far as being open, which is great. But you can follow the progress of each of these regions by going to forward.ny.gov, which is really an innovative way to show very clear transparency to everyone who's paying attention, and then they can see exactly how their region's doing in terms of meeting those seven metrics, but also continuing to meet them as we go forward into the next phases. So it's a great tool that the governor has insisted upon that the public be kept apprised of everything that's going on. That's why he does his daily press conferences. That's why he has this information updated in real time. So it's a real lesson in what good government looks like.
We're listening to New York State Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul. Lieutenant Governor, I don't want to get too further afield from what we're talking about here, but the President of the United States is equating mail-in voting with fraud in some cases. Are you worried about what's coming in November?
I worry about November all the time. I will say that it has been established for a long time in many states, like Oregon and Washington, where all they have is mail-in voting. They have about 90 to 95% participation from everyone in the state electing their leaders. I think this crisis has shown us now more than ever who our leaders are at the federal level and at the state level are more important to people's lives than they ever realized. The people that are determining and making life and death decisions that affect people and their families profoundly. And so I think this year people are going to wake up. Those who've been complacent, have not exercised their right to vote, will realize that leadership truly matters, whether it's the federal government, the state government, on down to your local government. And I really hope that this will be a turning point in our nation's history as we create more access to the ballot box. That's just a scare tactic, and no one should fall for it.
Well, let's talk about the other problem here, which is the huge economic toll that this virus is taking on the country and the world. We know in New York, the center of economic activity, we've got some real problems. And the governor, speaking of leadership, has been banging the table over and over again about the federal money that New York needs. So far, the state is $14 billion in the hole, and we need that money. Are you confident we can get the money we need?
We better get that money. We have experienced a huge shortfall in our revenues. And couple that with the extraordinary expenses we've had to incur to cover the cost of additional frontline workers, support our hospitals, paying exorbitant prices for something as simple as a mask that we had to scour the earth looking for supplies to keep our frontline workers and our healthcare workers safe. particularly in the early months of this, the amount of money we've had to spend on ventilators to prepare for the worst case scenario, which we were absolutely heading toward just a few short months ago. So yes, we are in trouble financially. The governor has sounded this alarm from the very beginning, asking for federal government help. And it is appalling to me that the first stimulus that they came out in their so-called help for states was basically spread around evenly like pork barrel, like all 50 states were treated equally. And you look at the numbers in terms of the states impacted by the coronavirus and COVID-19 infections. New York State being the hardest hit, and the whole world knows that, we received per coronavirus case about $23,000 per individual per case. You look at a state like Montana, it averaged out to be about $2 million per case, and in Alaska, over $3 million. So there's no logic behind how our representatives in Washington decided to allocate this necessary money. It was supposed to be there to help the states that were hard hit because of this. And those that are fortunate enough not to have seen an increase in cases or beyond their control did not have the same expenses as we did. They did not have the same drops in revenue as we have. So it's absurd. They need to right this wrong immediately. I know the House attempted to over the weekend with a bill that would have solved this problem for New York State and places like New Jersey and others that have really seen a spike in the numbers and have uncontrolled costs and a hit to their state finances. But if they don't do it, we're going to have to make some really, really draconian decisions that we don't want to take. We do not want to have cuts to our frontline workers, our hospital workers, our local governments, our fire, police, everybody who's been asked to put their lives on the line. And now we have to say, sorry, thank you for saving our lives, but because of the federal government, we don't have enough to pay you what we would have. That's disgraceful. And Congress and the president better not let that happen.
Lieutenant Governor Hochul, I can't thank you enough for taking all this time with us today.
Thank you.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 2022. Or just listen or podcast on the web, WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.